All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type helicopter pilot, Vietnam 1969. Want to welcome you to our program today. It's a really great one, I think. We've got an author on, and Robert B. O'Connor. His book is entitled Jeep Show, and it's about entertainers who went to the front lines during World War II in Europe and did these vaudeville type of acts. And three guys in a Jeep and a driver would go up to the front lines and do their shows and then run like hell to get away from all the artillery and stuff. But it's a cool story, and I'm anxious to talk to Bob about his book in just a couple of minutes. Later on in the program, we're going to be running our monthly segment from the NVBDC, the National Veterans Business Development Council. And this one is my partner, Jim Falsone, talks with Annette Stevenson, and she's an Army veteran, and then she is the owner of Stevenson Consulting Corporation and a board member of the NVBDC. So we always do at least once a month, we do a spotlight of the members of NVBDC. And then I've got another guy I'm going to talk to toward the end of the program who is listening in right now, and he's a Marine. I was going to say former Marine, but I know Marines are never former Marines. They're always Marines, and never goes out of their blood, which is understandable. And that's Brian Baya, United States Marine, who is a member of the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310 that I'm a member of. And we were talking the other night, and I said, hey, come on down. Let's talk a little bit on the program. So he's listening in right now, and I'll bring him on later on. But before we get into our interview with Bob O'Connor, I got to thank our sponsors, because can't do this program without them. So number one is Legal Help for Veterans, specializing in veterans' disability claims. Give Legal Help a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. NVBDC is really important for anybody out there listening that is a veteran-owned business, I mean a really veteran-owned business, and you want to do business with the federal government or many corporations, and they want to know if you're a certified veteran-owned business, these are the guys to go to, and they will get you certified. And all kinds of seminars and information that they can help you out with. That's nvbdc.org. PuroClean is known as the paramedics of property damage. They provide water damage remediation, flood water removal, fire and smoke damage remediation, mold removal, all kinds of things. The reason we're talking to the folks from PuroClean is because they are one of the nation's leading restoration franchise networks and is made up of entrepreneurs just like you. And veterans get 25% off their franchise fee. And so for more information about them, go to PuroClean.com. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. And the Vietnam Veterans of America, the national organization, never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. For more information, go to their website. That's vva.org. And finally, our two local veteran service organizations, the Irwin Prescorn American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, you know, if you'd like to support Veterans Radio, please go to our website, veteransradio.org. Click on the donate button. Thank you in advance. Now let's get into our program. Okie dokie. Here we go. All right. So I was sent this email by a promotion company or your publisher. I'm not sure what it is. And the book was entitled Jeep Show. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. What the heck is a Jeep Show? And so she was kind enough to send me a PDF copy of the book. And I started reading it and I couldn't put it down. So I went back to Susan and I said, hey, we got to get him on the program. And she kindly did that. So welcome to Veterans Radio, Robert B. O'Connor. I'm going to be calling him Bob from now on. He is the author of Jeep Show. So, Bob, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to talk to you and to your audience.
Well, it's a real privilege, I think, to talk to you because this is I thought this was really a kind of a cool idea. So to tell our audience, what exactly was a Jeep show?
The Army in World War II went to great lengths to try to make sure that the troops did not get bored and perhaps do things that the Army wouldn't approve of. Combat soldiers, the soldiers on the front lines, though, never saw the big USO shows and never got many of the things that were done easier to do in the rear echelon. Jeep shows were organized in late 43, early 1944, to get entertainment to these frontline combat infantrymen. And the way it worked is there were enlisted entertainers. It was MOS 442, enlisted entertainers that were in what I call in the book the Morale Corps. It was actually called Special Services during the war. These three of these enlisted entertainers would get in a Jeep with a driver, and they would drive just behind the front lines, where the frontline combat troops may have been brought back for a hot meal, maybe a shower. Dale, as you know, because the United States did not have as many infantry divisions as some of the other, for example, the Russians or the Germans, infantry divisions were never rotated out of combat.
Right.
Unlike pilots who might do a certain number of combat missions and then be rotated back to the States, when you were in an infantry division, the only way out was to be badly wounded or captured or killed. So the combat soldiers and keeping the morale of the combat soldiers up was a focus of the Army, and this was one of the more successful things they did. I should add, and all soldiers in the audience know this, but nothing beats mail from home. Nothing beats mail from home, but the next best thing is to get some entertainers to physically be present up at the front, to physically be present. And so that is how Jeep shows came about. They were actually the idea of a famous director named Joshua Logan. Among many other shows, Joshua Logan wrote and directed South Pacific. He was a superstar Broadway director. And he was in Special Services and put together this idea of sending Jeep shows to the combat soldiers at the front.
It sounded so cool to me. I love the concept of it. What is your background and what caused you to write this story?
My background, I became a writer. I went through a tough patch in my late 40s. Maybe everybody does. And at the time, it seemed to me that the best way for me to stay sane was to express my thoughts through writing. And I've always been fascinated with the concept of morale and how we do or don't do the things that need to be done when they need to be done, the tough things. So I actually wrote a nonfiction book on that subject. And then when that was done, turned my attention to World War II. My father, as with many Americans of my age, my father served in the armed forces in World War II. So I was interested in that. And then I had a few years ago, I learned about a real person, Jim Hetzer, who had been an enlisted entertainer in World War II and had been in Mickey Rooney's Jeep Show Squad.
This is the Mickey Rooney of National Velvet fame and Andy Hardy fame.
Exactly. Mickey Rooney was Hollywood's number one box office star in 1939 and 1940. Mickey Rooney's, and he was considered by his peers to be, along with Charlie Chaplin, the most talented actor of his time. An absolute genius. And as you know, where there are great strengths, there are corresponding weaknesses. And
He had a few.
he had a few, and his boss at MGM thought, as it got into late 1943, that it would be good for Mickey Rooney to join the army and serve, because almost everybody was. So this real person, Jim Hetzer, actually worked with Mickey Rooney. Jim was a dance instructor before the war, and had tried his hand at show business in New York, but had not made a success of it. I actually located his daughter, a very charming person, and learned that his family had published a book of the letters he wrote home from his time in the army, both Camp Siebert, where they did their training, which no longer exists, and then the European Theater of Operations. So I had a huge amount of what we call in the trade primary sources,
Yeah, I would guess
and
so.
and could follow his adventures there. I enjoyed the research a great deal, probably too much, because one of the things that you learn when you write a book is, 3/4 of what you write is going to end up in the wastebasket, and it's a terrible waste of time to, do huge amounts of research, and then, you're not going to be able to use it. But that's okay. I enjoyed the research very much, and it does kind of give a depth, even if there was nowhere near room to put in all the facts that I had learned. It does give it some depth, behind what I did put in. That's what inspired me. And as you were saying, it's such an interesting topic. And I have found that World War II buffs, and there are many World War II buffs, of all ages and genders. I have not run into one of them yet that it was aware that there were enlisted entertainers.
I was really interested in that, and I think you just struck a nerve. I was thinking, when you were talking about these amateur historians, I think it comes down to a lot of us would really like to know what life was like when our parents were in World War II or just prior to World War II. What was going on? Because they never talked that much about it.
Exactly. That is
And
exactly
especially
right.
their own experiences. I mean, my dad was in the Pacific in the Coast Guard guarding Iwo Jima and Okinawa and stuff, and never said a word until we did a program here on Veterans Radio about the Coast Guard. And some really old guy called in and says, "Oh, I knew your dad." What?
Oh,
So that's how I found out where he had been and so
Yeah.
on and so forth. But this was so interesting to me because not only does Jim Hetzer slash Tanzer,
Yeah.
you're talking about the late 1930s at the end of the Depression. So he's been in the CCC. He's been to the Catskills for people from the
Right.
East. People from
Right.
the East Coast will recognize that. That's where
Yes.
all
Yes.
the Jewish entertainment centers were and
Right.
camps were, and
Right.
if you saw Dirty Dancing, that's one of those
Yes.
places.
Yes.
And he was there trying to break into the entertainment industry. He was able to avoid the draft because he was married and had a child,
Right.
but he volunteered. So what was the idea behind volunteering, do you think?
Well, there's the idea he felt that he told his wife that he felt it was his patriotic duty, and so many men were volunteering that there was, as you well know, there was great social pressure on men to be involved with the armed services. I also kind of put in under the surface the idea that he might have been trying to get away from the complicated situation of adult life and, making a living and dealing with that. And there is an undertone of that idea that he is kind of retreating, if you will, from the perils of adult life.
Well,
But
unfortunately, again, I don't want to give away too much of the book because I want people to read this. I think you'll really enjoy the read. The book is called Jeep Show, and you got to look at it and read it. We're talking with Bob O'Connor, the author of the book. If you're going to look it up on Amazon, look under Robert O'Connor. I'm sorry to personalize this,
yeah.
but my dad enlisted at the age of 39.
Wow.
Because he was afraid, because they were drafting up until 40. And he figured, well, if they're going to get me, I can't be in the infantry. There's
Right,
no way I can
right,
run around
right,
and do all that stuff.
right.
And he ended up in the Coast Guard guarding the wrong
That,
coasts. But
that's amazing.
you mentioned that Jim was working in vaudeville, was trying to break in, in New York and all these other things. And he decided that he was going to enlist, but he didn't want to go in as an entertainer, did he?
No, he wanted to go in as a paratrooper. But like your guest later in the program, he was too tall for paratrooping. And one of the recurring jokes in the book is he tried to make it into show business as a song and dance man. And he keeps being told that he's too tall for ballroom dancing.
Oh, it's like a Buddy Epstein to me.
Yes, exactly. That is called eccentric dance. And
okay.
Yes, he keeps being coached to get into eccentric dance. So he wanted paratroopers. The Army, as you well know, sends you where they think they need you. And because of his show business background, they made him an entertainment soldier.
Okay. So can you, and to our audience, the book
yeah.
is kind of, it's based, the beginning of the book is loosely based on Jim Hertzer's life. And then you kind of use your fictional writing skills
right.
toward the end. But kind of describe to our audience how he got to England. Because now he has met Mickey Rooney.
Right.
The real Mickey Rooney. In fact, and there were some other people that you mentioned that were part of this cheap camp.
Enlisted entertainers included, of course, Mickey Rooney, Mel Brooks was in special services. Sammy Davis Jr. Was in special services. The comedian Red Buttons, Burt Lancaster, the great dance producer Bob Fosse, Dick Van Dyke, Burl Ives, Don
wow.
Knotts. So there's a long cast of men that went on to have or had already had in some instances, solid careers in
right.
show business. And then there were dozens and dozens and dozens of Jim Tanzers who were performers, but had not made it in show business
yeah.
until the Army put them there.
Can you describe for our audience this? They all went over to England in what, 1944?
This group, the Special Services Battalion that these Jeep Show men were part of, went over on the Queen Mary in, it was about September of 1944. At that time, they did not know that they were going to be doing Jeep Shows on the front line. They were actually the cast and the orchestra of a big army show, a big army show to be put on in London and Paris. There were a feature of the times was that they would do large theatrical shows with enlisted men. So they thought their show, which had played in New York and some other places in the East Coast, they thought that they were going to be taking their show to England and France, liberated France.
Was this,
however,
was it, I was going to say, is this the parody of Shakespeare thing? Or was that something else? Was that another show?
That's another show. The main character, and this was just a creation of my imagination, becomes very interested in Hamlet and is writing a parody called Spamlet, because Spam made up a large part of the GI diet in World War II, if they weren't eating carrot, and it was even in K rations. So they got over to England, and as you know, the army will decide things and not tell you why, and the show was, apparently the army felt that there was already too much entertainment in Paris for GIs, and there had been such rapid movement of troops from the breakout in Normandy to just about the German border in literally a matter of 3 or 4 months. So the army was stretched sort of thin, and there were men on the front line then, literally on the German border in Belgium and Luxembourg, especially, that needed to be reached. And so the idea of Jeep shows was invented at that point to reach these far-flung men on the front line who were not able to be reached with by the Red Cross or the USO.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think Bob Hope did any shows that close to the front.
No, Bob Hope was incredible contributor, but the USO shows could not go in these combat areas.
So can you tell our audience a little bit about what kind of acts these chief shows did?
Yes. Essentially, it was a small variety show. So let's say you were, you know, there was three. Mickey Rooney was one of the three. There was one of the guys would play an accordion. He would literally be a professional musician before the war, and he'd play an accordion, and Mickey Rooney would do a routine, and probably what's known as a two-man routine with the other guy, where the other guy would be kind of the straight man for Mickey Rooney, and they would sing songs, and they would dance, and they almost always would pull a soldier out of the audience who his buddies would, you know, say he could perform something. And, you know, they pull him out of the audience, and he might do a terrible impression of Edward G. Robinson, or he might sing, or he might have real talent and do something. So kind of a portable variety show, you know, a K-ration version of a variety show.
I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
When you think about it, the way you described it, they had a kind of a wrestling routine that they did in the book.
Yes. that was real. Mickey Rooney did a famous movie in the, I think, mid-30s called Boys Town. And it included a pantomime wrestling match. And Mickey Rooney lifted that routine from that movie, and he and his Jeep show squad did that pantomime, slow motion pantomime wrestling match. Must have probably did it 1,000 times, between 1944 and 1945. And, you know, they did it for, you know, two soldiers and a goat. They did it for 1,000 airmen, you know, at a big airfield in England. So, yes, that was the core of their routine. Thanks for reminding me about that.
I just thought that was funny. Yeah. And the whole description that you give in the book. The book is titled Jeep Show, and the author is Robert B. O'Connor. And I know you can get the book pretty much anywhere as soon as it comes out, which is in the next couple of days, isn't it?
It's coming out Thursday. It'll be available on Amazon Thursday. We'll get to regular bookstores a little bit later, but I wanted to get it out for the 80th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge.
Speaking of which,
yes.
All right. So we have our main character over in Europe, and He's running around with doing his Jeep shows, and he gets stuck in the middle of the Battle of the Bulge and gets separated from everybody, it seems like, and it ends up with a great description. I mean, just a really detailed, unfortunately probably a little graphic, but still such an important description of what he was up to, because he ran around and everything that could go wrong for him went wrong.
Right, right. There were company-sized strong points on the German, literally a mile from the German border, and he and Mickey Rooney and their colleague are doing a show in a little village called Hosingen, and which is a company-sized strong point. And yeah, he gets events happen, and there's no room for Jim in the Jeep, and he gets stuck there. And the next morning, the December 16th, 1944 is the next morning, and the Germans begin the artillery bombardment at about 5 a.m. And he is scrambling all the way to Bastogne over the next 3 or 4 days.
He runs into a lot of really unusual characters, too.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And
I don't want to give them all away, but there are a couple.
Yeah,
that I,
okay.
All right. Well, there's the one that he exchanges is gives his dog tags to.
Yes. Yes. One of the infantry soldiers at 28th Division company. One of the infantry soldiers in Hosingen is Jewish, and during the German attack, it is clear that this company strong point is going to be surrounded, bypassed, and surrounded by the Germans. And the captain in charge of the company, the XO, asks Jim to give his dog tags to this Jewish soldier, because the fear is that this is SS, or that the Gestapo will be right behind the German troops, and that they will murder, you know, Jewish soldiers. So Jim does give his dog tags to the Jewish soldier, and there is a plot twist, Dale, and I don't know if you want me to mention it, but it leads to a significant and interesting, I hope, plot twist later on of mistaken identity.
Right,
we'll leave it at that. Yes. We'll leave it at that.
Well, the other thing was that the evidently is that the protagonist, the hero of the story, also spoke German or a little German.
Yeah.
And so the next thing he is drafted as an interpreter.
Yes. Yes. His mother was a immigrant from Germany. There were so many immigrants from Germany.
Sure.
in the late 19th century. So there was German at home. The protagonist, Jim's German, is very imperfect. But he is not afraid to use it to avoid other unpleasant duties. And so there are a few interrogation scenes of Germans, both officers and enlisted men, where Jim's imperfect German is causing some confusion.
When he picks up a buddy along the way who was actually was a German prisoner.
He picks up a fellow that was born in Milwaukee, whose parents went back to Germany in the mid-30s. This fellow was then drafted into the German army, was not thrilled about being in the German army, and gets captured by the protagonist, Jim, and ends up, yes, helping with the interrogations. Yes, Willie Hawk. all his German colleagues just are always teasing him about his Milwaukee accent.
Speaks German with a
Milwaukee
accent. I think the Battle of Bulge caused so many infantrymen to be separated from their units.
Yes, yes.
That they formed up. I don't know if the army did this or these guys did it, but they formed up their own unit, sort of called a snafu. So we don't have to go through the whole definition of what
right.
a snafu is, but because I think most of our audience knows what it means. Anyway, it's kind of this ragtag group of everybody from everywhere.
Yes, Team Snafu is a lesser known participant in the Battle of the Bulge, and particularly in the Siege of Bastogne, in that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of soldiers, either infantrymen from companies that had been overrun, or barbers, telephone operators, band members, various non-combat soldiers fell back to Bastogne or were stuck there and were organized into Team Snafu, which essentially had an important combat role in trying to fill gaps between the 101st Parachute Division battalions. Because as I recall, there are four in paratroopers, there are four battalions and they were spaced around Bastogne, and there were gaps in between that Team Snafu members would be trying to fill at various times. They also did other duties like gathering food supplies from farms around the area, and there is a chapter where Jim is involved with a Graves registration effort.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah,
that's. I mean, all these stories in there, you know, that you've weaved through the book, are all real.
Yes,
I mean, I know they're real, and you just go, oh, how did these guys do this? And then, you know, when you read the stories, I mean, not only is he part of a Graves registration thing, but then he ends up being at one of the concentration camps when it's liberated, and you do a masterful job, I think, of describing the concentration camp and what it looks like, and again, you're bringing in all these characters of Hollywood directors and filmmakers and so forth, and they want to we got to take a picture of that, we got to do this, because they want to make a documentary to show to the German people what the hell really happened here, folks.
Right. And to the American audience, because there was, as Eisenhower said, and Eisenhower did tour this camp, as Eisenhower said, you know, we'll show people what we were fighting for, because there was some significant, especially before the war, there was some significant American opinion that, you know, this is not our business. I did not want to have a lively, you know, at times very funny narrative of the war without showing the suffering, the terrible, terrible toll that war takes on the soldiers that participate, the combat soldiers in particular, and civilians. So I wanted to show that through the eyes of this one kind of misplaced soldier. Yes.
Well, I think you've done a really masterful job of weaving humor and drama throughout the book. The book is called A Jeep Show, and the author is Robert O'Connor. And I really encourage people to go out and read this. It's not only is it enlightening, especially for some people that are, you know, over 70,
who want to
find out what their folks actually did. But then again, for the younger generation, what did granddad do in the war and so forth? Because many times, obviously, they did not talk about their experiences. And some of it is it's laugh out loud humorous, and it's also tear jerking when you see what modern day war does to a whole country, but to end up on a happier note, I guess, is that we know that our protagonist did survive, although he did get court martial him for stealing a Jeep, which he didn't steal. Which I thought was, well, that's just, let me, t- I have to throw in this story. This is one of our local heroes.
Please.
Charlie Kettles was a Medal of Honor recipient. He was a helicopter pilot who lived here in Michigan, and the VA center is named after him now. But his Medal of Honor, he received it for going back again and again and again, picking up wounded soldiers. Mm-hmm. And one time his whole company had pulled out and they thought they had everybody, and somebody calls on the radio and says, "Oh, we forgot something." He immediately turns back and goes in gets eight more of them out, loses his door gunner. The helicopter's just shot to hell.
Yeah.
So anyway, during that particular day, he wrecked four or five helicopters. I mean, they're all full of bullet holes and all this other stuff. So when he got his Medal of Honor, he received from the United States Army a bill for $483,000 for all of the repairs on the helicopters he broke that day. And
that's so funny.
Followed up by a bill stamped paid in full.
So. That's absolutely. I believe that the unit of Patton's armored force that relieved Bastogne also presented the 101st Airborne with an invoice related to the special trip they had to make from France to relieve Bastogne.
There's all that dark humor.
Yes.
That does go on in the military. It wouldn't survive without it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think the other thing is that you weave all of these characters in their real characters. I mean, like the Pattons and the Eisenhowers and the Bradleys and all these famous names. You even bring the Russians in and they have a big party together and they're singing and dancing, and Mickey Rooney goes off on a drum playing riff. I don't know how much of this is true or not, but I sure suckered me. I thought it was.
About half of it, probably.
But anyway, so I really want to thank you for being on Veterans Radio.
Sure.
I really encourage, again, as I said, people just go out and read this book. I think you'll really enjoy it. I mean, the title grabbed me. That's why I wanted to see what it was all about. But as you said, it's going to be out in Amazon in a couple of days. Yeah. Big Christmas present for older relatives and younger relatives as well, just to see what the world was like back in the 1940s.
Great. Dale, thanks so much for letting me talk with you and your audience. It's been a real pleasure.
Okay. Thank you. Let me know the next time you write a book.
I'll talk to you in a couple of years.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We're going to take a real quick break. We're going to do our Medal of Honor segment. And then when we come back, we're going to do our NVBDC. But come back to me, Derek, when we get a chance. All right. So here we go. So this is our Medal of Honor segment for today. It's James Fox, and it happens to be during the Battle of the Bulge. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant John Fox called in artillery fire on his own position. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
On Christmas night in 1944, enemy soldiers in civilian clothes gradually infiltrated the town Fox and his men were in, and by early morning, the town was largely in hostile hands. An organized attack by uniformed German units began at 4 a.m. Being greatly outnumbered, most of the American forces were forced to withdraw from the town, but Fox and other members of his observer party voluntarily remained on the second floor of a house to direct defensive artillery fire. Fox reported the Germans were in the streets and attacking in strength. He then called for defensive artillery fire to slow the enemy advance. As the Germans continued to press the attack towards the area that Fox occupied, he adjusted the artillery fire closer to his position. Finally, he was warned that the next adjustment would bring the deadly artillery right on top of his position. After acknowledging the danger, Lieutenant Fox insisted that the last adjustment be fired, as this was the only way to defeat the attacking soldiers. Later, when a counterattack retook the position from the Germans, Lieutenant Fox's body was found with the bodies of approximately 100 German soldiers.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio. And right now we're going to go to our NVBDC segment, or our spotlight of the month. My partner Jim Falsone interviewed Army veteran Annette Stevenson. She is the owner of the Stevenson Consulting Group, and she's also a board member of NVBDC. So here we go. This is, as they said, this was recorded earlier. So here is Jim Falsone and Annette Stevenson.
Welcome. I am Jim Falsone, and this is a Veterans Radio Spotlight on the National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC.org. We have a partnership with NVBDC, which is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses, really of all sizes. This 501c3 has been in business, doing its good work for over 10 years now, and it addresses the growing need to identify and certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses for commercial or corporate and marketplace, as well as the government. It provides a rigorous certification process designed to withstand the scrutiny of corporate entities seeking to utilize certified veteran-owned businesses. And we want to welcome to the program today Annette Stevenson, an Army veteran. Annette, welcome.
Thank you. Grateful for the opportunity.
Well, you're a 10-year Army veteran, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But let's start with, as president of Stevenson Consulting Group, and you have a long business history in supplier diversity, how did you get involved with NVBDC?
Well, when I came off of active duty trying to figure out what my next step was, I wound up working for the state of North Carolina for about 7 years in contracts and grants and some minor purchasing, and then had the opportunity to go to corporate America. So I wound up working at SAS Institute for 18 years. Got credentialed as a procurement analyst, and then was working actually for a retired Army warrant officer in procurement, and he gave me the opportunity to stand up and manage our supplier diversity program. So a couple years into that, when veterans were coming to the forefront of business opportunities in corporate America, it's where I met Keith. And, he didn't believe I was a veteran at first. You know, Keith just always questioned him. Yes. Because I'd actually served in the National Guard and Reserves in college before I came on active duty and got my RA. So we talked and see how we could help veterans in the corporate space. I helped him build some relationships through the industry groups and, you know, was able to reach out to Apple, Oracle, Dell, all those big corporations, AT&T, and Google, when they were looking at the different certifications for veterans that were coming online, you know, aside from the VACBE, because there was so much fraud, a lot of corporations did not want to take the CBE verification. So when Keith stood this up and, became gold standard and, you know, really understand what it takes to be a vet according to the public law, reading the 214s, we just drove it. Now I serve as a board member for the NVBDC, and my own consulting company is NVBDC certified also.
And I believe you're also the vice president of North Carolina Veterans Business Association.
Oh, I was, but as my business started to grow, I had to, pick and choose. So
yeah,
we all learned
we can't do it all, but this was exactly. Obviously an important thing. You were just at the National Convention for NVBDC in Detroit, Michigan. Why is it important, if you're a veteran-owned business, to get certified, Annette? Can you give us your vast experience as to why is this important?
Yes. So thank you for that question. Because it's funny. We don't know what we don't know. You know, most veterans understand is the federal sector, right? The SBA, the CBE program, now the Vets First program. And that's to do business in the federal contracting arena, right? Has really nothing to do with the corporate mindset. But veterans don't understand there's three different sectors to have opportunity: federal, state and local, and corporate. And so for an organization like SAS and a lot of the major corporations, they do business in all three verticals, right? And there's different requirements that you have to meet. And ironically enough, even if you're verified or certified through the SBA now, if you outgrow your NAICS codes, right, or your number of employees, you're no longer eligible to be certified because you've outgrown the small business requirements. That doesn't happen with NVBDC. Okay. So if you notice, it's that little S in the SDVOSB versus SDVOP, right? Acronym city. But by getting certified through NVBDC, you know, they've been accepted by the $1 billion roundtable. And as you mentioned in the introduction, they thoroughly vet you that you own, operate and control your company. And even more so that you meet the standards to be a veteran. Okay. And we didn't make them up. It's not pick and choose. We like you. We don't. It's by the public law, right? That you meet the criteria to be a veteran. And so the corporations appreciate that standard of certification. And when you go through the process, and it is a fee-based process, I always tell people it's like getting a college degree, right? A college degree does not guarantee you a job. It's a hunting license. It's a credential. And that's what certification gets for you. It's a badge that you've been thoroughly vetted. The corporations that look at you now know you've been through that process, and they're willing to give you an opportunity and a seat at the table to go through and look for those corporate opportunities.
And really, one of the things that NVBDC, as you mentioned, is sort of the gold standard for veteran certification. That's on the individual company side, certifying the company. But it has all these relationships with these really large companies who want to do business with certified veteran-owned businesses. And that's sort of unique as well, those introductions to all of those big companies. And that's also the side of the table that you've been able to play on.
Yes, exactly. Well, because, you know, businesses want to have the value, right? So if I'm paying that certification fee, what's the value? They want to do business with veterans because veterans like myself, I'm Asian American. I'm an Army brat. My father was an original member of Special Forces back in the 50s. He was a Vietnam vet also. And I grew up at Fort Bragg. But the characteristics that veterans bring to the table, well, I mean, one, I got sideways, but I'm a minority woman service disabled vet. So veterans cross the whole spectrum, right? And you can have multiple certifications, but the value we bring from our experiences by serving in the military, you know, we can make a lot happen with limited resources, working well under pressure, hard work, the leadership, the innovation, the teamwork. You know, it's something, and logistics, right? We're great at logistics and problem solving and big picture thinking. All that goes into entrepreneurship. And this isn't to say that other groups or minority women don't have that characteristic, but it's pretty much what we do in the military. You know, we've learned how to step up to the plate and take ownership. And that's what corporations and businesses are looking for from their suppliers. How can you help me fix this problem? Can you save money? Can you help me save time? Is there something else I should be doing? Is there innovation that you can bring to the table? And a lot of time that is through veteran-owned businesses being able to provide that. And the stat that, you know, Keith just shared was the $1 billion roundtable members, the corporations, spent $4.3 billion with NVBDC certified vets last year.
Well, if that's not enough to motivate you to say, hey, maybe I want a piece of that opportunity, let me go get certified by NVBDC. Right. Certainly the experiences of Annette Stevenson across a broad range of having her own businesses, working for a major corporation, understanding supplier diversity ought to be enough to motivate you. And you can go to nvbdc.org to get started. They're very helpful, but it is a rigorous program.
Hey, we're back here on Veterans Radio. And nothing like muting your mic when you want to talk to somebody. All right. That was Jim Fausone talking with the representative of NVBDC, Annette Stevenson. I wanted to bring on a new friend of Veterans Radio right now. He's a Marine. We got a couple of minutes to talk with him, Brian Bayab. Brian, welcome back to Veterans Radio. Thanks for listening in the whole show.
Hey, that's all right. It's good stuff.
So tell our audience, we got a little story about it, that you were a Marine and that you were on your way to Vietnam, but they said you're too tall.
Yeah, the whole platoon went but me, I guess. It was kind of a shock, but they just pulled me aside and said, "You're not going, you're too tall." I was officially the tallest Marine they ever had.
Hey, how tall are you?
I was 6'11". I'm getting old, so I'm not as tall anymore, I don't think. But
I know you're one of the few people that I really have to look up to, no pun intended there.
Ironically, I have found in the last year, there's a guy in California that has a website called the World's Tallest Marine. I mean, Marine Corps' Tallest Marine or something like that. And he's only 6'9".
Oh, well, hey, that's nothing.
And I was aware of him because the articles that they had about me being the tallest guy, I have an article that says there was a guy that was 6'9" before me. And I don't want to bust his bubble, but, you know, sorry. he's got a website. I don't, so that's all right.
Well, we'll start promoting. We have the tallest Marine on our program.
Yeah.
So what did you end up doing in the Marines?
Heavy equipment mechanic in North Carolina. And then, ironically, I saw a lot of returning veterans, both well-adjusted and shell-shocked. And then I ended up from Camp Lejeune, I ended up on Cherry Point. There was a bunch of guys showing up from there, and by then they had started to rebuild their barracks into two-man rooms. And I ended up having my own room for about 2 weeks, and then they put a guy in there that was pretty extremely shell-shocked. And we had some good conversations, you know, because nobody else would room with him. So, it's just what it is.
Yeah, I know. I know you're a good guy and you are involved in a lot of things here with our local veteran service organizations. You're in the Honor Guard.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. They're all ages of funerals that we do. There's not as many from World War II anymore, but a lot of Korea now and guys our age, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So, and you get to read about their obituaries and stuff if you want to. So,
well, I think it's great that you are interested in you know, coming on to our program, and you know, I'm looking forward to you maybe gathering up some of these taller Marines and so forth, and maybe we could do a program about that or any of the other stories that you've been exposed to, because we're coming up to the end of the program here.
Yep, it is what it is. I had the experience of graduating boot camp with my utility uniforms because they didn't have my dress uniform yet. So
I gotta go. We gotta go, Brian. I'm sorry to cut you off. All right, we'll be back next week. So you've been listening to Veterans Radio. Go to our website, veteransradio.org. You are dismissed.
My home, sweet home. from the mountain.